I never intended to write a book while building and growing the business full time. I was approached by a literary agent after Bulletin. My company was in the New York Times in 2017, and it felt like an opportunity I obviously had to, you know, say yes to.
Hey, friend, it's David Nabinsky here in New York City. Welcome to Portfolio Career Podcast, where we help you design your life on your terms for today's world. Today's episode is with Ali Kriegsman. She's the co-founder and COO of Bulletin, a five-year-old venture-backed startup that is a curated wholesale marketplace filled with the most coveted brands. The company initially started as a side hustle, and you'll hear how the side hustle grew and also how the company has pivoted over the years as well. You may be able to see some parallels to how your work and your portfolio career has pivoted as well. Ali's first book, How to Build a Goddamn Empire, is out April 2021. And I really wanted to learn from Ali what it was like writing a book while running an intense company. At Portfolio Career Podcast, we believe that you have the potential to do more than your 9-to-5. And this is such a perfect example of that and more. We also talk about Ladylike, a band that Ali started. And as you can see here, Ali is full of creativity, creative work, while also building an impressive, inspiring company. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There, you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which has the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Ali. Ali, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Ali, I'm fascinated by kind of random, unexpected connections and kind of one email can change things. And I'm fascinated. I think I saw something around with your music series, Ladylike, that
yes.
You met your maybe your collaborator on Craigslist or something like that.
Yes, yes, I did.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
So I have always loved music. I'm a singer. I consider myself a songwriter that can't actually play an instrument, but I totally hear melodies in my head and love editing other people's songs. And when I moved to New York a few years in, I was transitioning apartments and I hired a random guy off Craigslist. He was building my shelf for me in my bedroom. And we were just getting to know each other. And as it turns out, we were both interested in music. We both had experience songwriting. And he mentioned to me that he had a friend named Ryan who was moving from Texas to New York to pursue a hybrid like graphic design and music career. And he was like, I just have this, you know, itch. I think that I have a feeling that you two would really get along. I definitely want to connect you both. So the three of us ended up getting dinner in Bushwick a couple weeks later. And we decided to form a little band. The first guy actually ended up leaving pretty soon after. We just like didn't really align on musical taste and style, but Ryan and I had really similar taste in music, a really similar approach to, you know, doing music for fun and not necessarily doing it for any greater purpose other than just kind of fulfilling that part of ourselves that wasn't getting addressed in our full-time jobs. And it was really great. We would go record in his basement. We worked together for about 2.5 years. We put out like a small little EP in 2018. He's since moved to North Carolina. So we're not working together anymore, but it was a really great way, especially with certain stresses that were coming up with Bulletin and certain demands with my business. It was a really great way to unplug and, you know, not be on my phone for hours in a row and just get really creative with someone that I thought had really great energy and we had a really strong creative connection together.
Yeah, I love that. And because it reminds me about what we're going to talk a little bit more about is how, you know, writing a book and running a company as well. And it seems like that's been kind of that's another example of kind of feeling, kind of expanding, but also scratching that creative itch whenever kind of feel like it.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, it's as an entrepreneur and especially a venture-backed entrepreneur where you have really aggressive goals around growth and scale, it's not like a lifestyle business where you can do what you like and play a role that you really love, you kind of have to adjust to what the business demands of you and requires of you. So the work I do at Bulletin has, you know, ebbed and flowed and changed so much over time. So there were periods where I was able to be really creative, and then other periods where I had to be way more strategic and analytical, and that side of me wasn't getting nourished. So I'm all about creating a well-rounded life and not relying too much on your full-time job to serve all those parts of you and all those desires. And definitely try to make a point to, you know, do things on the side or on the weekends or in the little free time that I do have to tend to that creative side.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a kind of a core pillar or tenet of portfolio careers, like, you know, doing more than just the main job. And obviously you got a lot of demands being a co-founder and COO of a venture-backed company.
Yeah, it's super demanding, that's for sure. And yeah, I think with the book, it was a really exciting opportunity. I never intended to write a book while building and growing the business full time. I was approached by a literary agent after Bulletin, my company, was in the New York Times in 2017. And it felt like an opportunity I obviously had to, you know, say yes to. And I wrote the proposal. You know, we went to market with it, shared it with a few publishers. My publisher, Abrams, really wanted it. I thought they were a great fit. And so began my journey of writing a book and running the company full time. But I wouldn't have traded it for anything. And I think it gave me this really unique chance to create a different type of business book written by someone that was in the trenches, kind of tackling a lot of these business problems and questions and concerns in real time. Whereas a lot of business books, especially ones written by women, were written, you know, after a certain big milestone. Like Sophia Amoruso had written Girl Boss after she was listed as, you know, one of the top self-made women in Fortune magazine. Sheryl Sandberg wrote Lean In, you know, at the peak of her career. She was decades ahead of where I am. And I really wanted to write a book that felt like a companion for existing entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs, rather than a book that felt like it was kind of written in 2020 hindsight. So I think the fact that I wrote it in real time while building and scaling Bulletin was definitely challenging for me, but I think it also makes the book very unique and something that I haven't really seen on the market quite yet.
Mm-hmm. And the book comes out in a couple of months?
Yeah, April 6th, 2021.
And it's titled?
How to Build a Goddamn Empire. It's a very aggressive title, very aggressive title, but it's kind of aggressive, but also cheeky. I really think when I was starting my career, my career as an entrepreneur, I would look at, you know, these massively well-known female founders that had become household names, like Ty Haney and Emily Weiss and Audrey Gelman at The Wing. And they had raised so much capital and were so front and center in the press and had built these absolutely massive businesses. And I think for a lot of women, it kind of felt like if I'm not doing that, or if I'm not reaching that big milestone or growing at that rate, you know, my company isn't legitimate or my entrepreneurship isn't real. And the reason I wanted to kind of reclaim the term empire is because I really think that an empire is something that you're building on your own terms. It doesn't necessarily need to be a, you know, full-time pursuit of entrepreneurship. I think, you know, women and founders running side hustles or running Etsy shops in addition to their full-time jobs have empires because they've taken some step toward financial agency, you know, toward working on something that they have full control and agency of. And to me, that means you're building an empire. So, you know, the book isn't necessarily a guide book or an instruction manual for building a, you know, $500 million business. I think it gives great tips and tricks and insights, you know, whether you're building that $500 million business or, you know, you're looking to build a $50,000 business and sell jewelry on Sundays at flea markets in your neighborhood. So yeah, the word empire is quite aggressive, but it was also a very deliberate inclusion because I kind of wanted to reframe what that word actually meant for founders.
Yeah. And that's a really inspiring and powerful message that just doing your own little work, your own little side hustle, your own little creative project, that's an empire because you built something from scratch.
Yep. It didn't exist before, and you put in the time and the thought and the strategy and the hustle and often, you know, the money to take it from zero to 60. And not everyone is going to be able to build massive businesses, whether it's bootstrapped or massively funded businesses, whether it's because they have lifestyle constraints or they just have other priorities. You know, I spoke to a lot of women that are running side hustles, and they're side hustles on purpose, and they're proudly running them part-time and, you know, not making an effort to do them full-time. I interview a teacher named Randy who runs an incredible jewelry company. She's a full-time teacher. She loves teaching and educating kids. You know, she feels like that's her biggest passion and mission in life, but just for a sense of ownership and agency and having some larger degree of control of her financial future. She's been running this amazing jewelry shop on Etsy and a few other platforms for years now. So, you know, it's not everyone is going to be able to go full-time with their business, whether because they have other priorities or they have certain financial constraints. And I want to let people know that that's completely okay. You're still an entrepreneur nonetheless. And, you know, your work is no less important than the founders that are building something full time. I really see all of these people as equals.
Amazing. And also, it didn't Bulletin kind of started as a side hustle for you and Alana, right?
Yeah. We started Bulletin for a very similar reason that Randy, the jewelry brand I mentioned, started her company, which was we weren't being fulfilled by our full time jobs in one way or another. I think for Alana, she, you know, she studied economics. She had run a small business in college on Etsy. She had run another e-commerce company coming out of college, and she is a problem solver by nature. And I feel like she just felt that the problems we were solving at our full-time job were kind of feeling stagnant and not challenging enough. So I think that was her angle. She really wanted a difficult nut to crack, and she wanted to kind of keep that stream of problem solving going on every single day. And for me, you know, I needed a creative outlet, which is something we chatted about earlier in the conversation. So Bulletin for me was a way to, you know, test out my marketing chops, do creative copywriting more frequently, you know, speak with and connect with amazing small businesses that I've always admired. There was no grand plan for, you know, becoming a Series A backed venture retail technology company. We've been on this, you know, very organic journey ever since we started Bulletin as a side hustle. But all to say, you can start something because you want to fulfill a certain part of yourself. Maybe you want to monetize a hobby. People launch their side hustles for a bunch of different reasons. And yeah, I think I definitely fell into the bucket of just wanting to do something different and get out of my normal routine.
I love that. And it's also really cool how, like, I think your like initial title was kind of like editor in chief at Bulletin. Yep. And then now you've, you know, published a book and stuff. So it's really cool to see it all kind of come full circle, which I think is a really powerful message to say, like, you kind of never know what the seeds that you're planting now, the things that you're doing now. And, you know, you kind of keep showing up and keep listening to yourself, and it can turn into some really amazing things.
I feel like that's the story of my life, to be honest. I feel like anyone I talk to, whether it's like an incredible high school girl that's looking to, you know, figure out what she wants to study in college because she, you know, has a grand plan for her career, or I'm talking to, you know, current women in college that are trying to figure out how to build fulfilling careers in a job market that's just becoming, you know, more and more fraught. My messaging is always, you know, give everything 150%, treat everyone like a gatekeeper. You never know what opportunity that you took for granted or didn't think too much about is going to turn around in 2 years and be a golden key for you. And I have so many examples of that. Like, I worked in a boutique in college. I worked at multiple jobs every summer in college. And one of them was working as a store associate at this small boutique in Santa Monica in California. And I wasn't super interested in retail. You know, I hadn't had the idea for Bulletin back then, but my experience working directly with that store owner and with that buyer and seeing the tools and the processes she was using to manage her store and do her inventory buying and planning totally informed the business that I'm running now. Same thing with the book. I thought I was going to have to kiss my writing career or my dream of becoming an author goodbye because, you know, Bulletin went from this digital publication spotlighting small businesses to a retail as a service company running stores to now a, you know, technology platform. And along that journey, it felt like there was no room for me to do something like write a book. But Alana, my business partner and our CEO, actually kept encouraging me to keep writing. So I wrote a piece for Refinery 29 about going full-time with my side hustle. I wrote a few pieces on Medium about Bulletin's business and our perspective on the changing retail landscape. And after Bulletin, our Nolita store was featured in the New York Times in 2017, my literary agent Elias Googled around and saw that I was a writer simply because I had kept writing and publishing a few pieces on the internet here and there. And I know that part of why he reached out to us about this book proposal was because there was already evidence that I could do it, you know, that I had this skill set. So again, I never wrote that Refinery 29 piece in 2016 or whenever it was thinking, oh, this is going to lead to a book deal. But I just kept doubling down and you know, fine tuning my strengths and exercising them and putting them out there. And, you know, those seeds may not sprout immediately, but here we are years later. And the fact that I kept doing that played a huge role in being able to get the attention of a literary agent and actually, you know, bring this book to life.
That's amazing. And I'll definitely link the Refinery 29 article in the show notes. It's a very inspiring and detailed piece. And what did that kind of outreach email to you about the book look like? Did, you know, sometimes I think like opportunity doesn't really look very shiny to say, hey, you can be successful, you know, reply to this email or, you know, or, hey, amazing opportunity here in the subject line. What did that, that kind of like initial email look like to you?
Yeah. Or how did you kind of realize it wasn't like a spam email or phishing expedition? So what actually happened was pretty crazy. My fabulous literary agent, his name is Elias. He emailed me and Alana, but we are a .co domain, not a .com domain. And I guess he tried to hack our emails and he emailed Ali@bulletin.com and did the same with Alana. So we never got that first email. And then what ended up happening is my boyfriend's mom, again, this is just, again, treat everyone like a gatekeeper. My boyfriend's mom is an incredible author and journalist. She was at Vanity Fair and the New York Times. And it just so happened that her literary agent ran the literary agency that Elias worked for. So Leslie, my boyfriend's mom, Leslie Bennett, came to a Bulletin store and had said that she'd just come from a meeting with her literary agent. She mentioned to him that she was on her way to the Bulletin store. She got a phone call minutes after leaving our store from her agent saying, a junior agent here has been trying to reach Ali and Alana at that silly store that you're at for weeks, and they haven't gotten back to us. We have no idea what's going on. And he then forwarded me the initial email that Elias had sent to the two incorrect email addresses. So it was this totally fakakta, like winding story, but all's to say, I actually never got that first email. I only saw it after the fact, but I think, I don't remember what the subject line was, but he was just kind of interested in, you know, our audience and the opportunity, you know, and obviously shared other books that he had represented. So it all felt very legitimate very early on. There was never any wariness of it being, you know, Russian hackers or anything like that.
That's crazy. It's like once it finally happened, like, okay, we can talk. I'm in.
I mean, after our first meeting, just because it's been a dream of mine to write a book since I was very young, since I was like 6 years old. I mean, I've been writing. It's such a deep you know, personal part of me. It's so intertwined in my identity. I just remember after my first meeting with Elias and then my other agent, Becky, just leaving the restaurant, waiting for them to turn the corner and just standing on the sidewalk, hysterically crying, just feeling like, oh my God, this is happening. But yeah, it's been a really positive journey from start to finish. And I'm just really excited for it to be out there.
Amazing. Can't wait to read it. And the another thing that's been really interesting to me is like how, you know, how much kind of Bulletin has pivoted a bunch. And I think I think the idea of around like it's hard as a person to pivot. And so it's just been really interesting to see how much the company has pivoted. And so I think that that's very inspiring as well to say, you know, if something's not working or the market changes, that it's okay for a venture-backed company to pivot as well.
Yeah. I mean, this is something I'm super passionate about talking about because it's, you pivot when it's life or death. I'll say candidly that, you know, we did Y Combinator in 2017. We had created this retail as a service model where brands were paying Bulletin a monthly membership fee to be in our co-retailing stores in New York. We had great retention in the stores. The brands were making money. We exclusively hosted female-founded businesses. We had this great consumer brand. You know, we had a healthy e-commerce business. But at the end of the day, I think we started to sense that scaling a brick and mortar business with venture capital just didn't really add up. I think there are other businesses that managed to do it. Adam Newman and WeWork being one of them, but I don't necessarily know that story ended with people saying, yes, this financing vehicle for this co-working model made a lot of sense. Maybe they took on too much capital. Maybe they just hadn't really figured out the tech element of the business, but I think we started to sense that we were going to be in deep trouble if we continued to rely on venture financing to scale a brick and mortar based business model. But the other thing that we noticed was that we had a crazy waitlist of brands that were clearly expressing that they wanted a more affordable turnkey way to get into retail stores. So Alana and I had to kind of come up with a solution that allowed us to scale because that was the promise that we'd made to our investors, having taken on venture capital. You know, you're promising to, you know, reach a certain level in sales, reach a certain level in users and customers. And as soon as we lost confidence that we'd be able to do that with our current business model, we felt like, okay, we can either, you know, refinance the company and become more of a true retailer, or we can, you know, really lean into the way we've been financed and try to become a technology company. And we decided to do the harder thing, which was become a true technology company. And it took a lot of, sweat and tears and new hires and shifts in the business, but, you know, it worked. We've been growing. It definitely wasn't easy, but I think at the end of the day, you need to make sure that the way that you finance the business model that you've put in place, the growth that you've promised and the scale that you want to achieve all align. And if those things don't align, I think a pivot might be in order. That was definitely the case for us.
And all those different financing strategies and methods and thinking about that in terms of how to set up the business and stuff, that's, you know, a lot of what is going to be in the book, right?
Yes, there's an entire chapter dedicated to how to finance your business. And we explore, you know, a bunch of different vehicles, whether it venture capital, you know, crowdfunding, bank loans, lines of credit. And I specifically created a, I won't say glossary for dummies because that I don't necessarily like the term dummies, but a venture capital glossary. Because when we started meeting investors, when we were in NYC, you know, as two female, non-technical female founders that didn't really have a, you know, investor network or a network that was tied to Silicon Valley at all, I had no idea what a cap table was. I had no idea what a Series A was compared to a seed round. I had no idea how a friends and family round was different than a Series C. I had no idea what like stocks and shares meant. And yeah, it might be embarrassing for me to admit that, but I think a lot of people, a lot of women, you know, don't have like a a network of people or founders that educate them on those things. I really feel like women have been blocked out of venture capital for decades. And I kind of wanted to create a little dictionary for women that might be in the same position that I was when I was 24. And, you know, I was Googling these terms and desperately trying to, you know, educate myself.
Amazing. Okay. And as we're about to kind of wrap up here in a little bit, you mentioned that you'd been speaking to people about, you know, earlier stages in their career and you kind of never know where things are going to go. Is there anything else related to that as you've been for helping people with their careers? Anything else that you think that we missed on that part?
I think what I wish I had done earlier was just really believe in myself and believe in my skill set and my strengths. When I was in college, I saw other people gunning for jobs in finance or jobs in consulting, jobs in banking. And that was never me, but I kind of started to associate those jobs with success. Like, I'm not successful unless I get this type of job, or I'm not successful unless I work at this type of company. And I wish I had reframed my thinking, because it definitely took me a while to try to build a career that, you know, leaned on the things I love doing, but also leaned on the things that I was really great at. So I would definitely challenge anyone that's either looking to build a business or make a career pivot or launch their career from ground zero, whether they're graduating or they're thinking about this stuff while they're in college, to, you know, be candid about and appreciate your strengths, and don't be afraid to pursue a career path that really leans on them. Don't compare yourself to other people. Don't index against other people's definitions of success. The thing that's going to, you know, yield the most money for you and the most satisfaction and keep you in the ring longest is dedicating yourself to work that both, you know, fulfills you and that you're naturally good at, that you can only kind of keep getting better at with practice and additional education and time.
Amazing. Well, Ali, please let listeners know where they can learn more about the book and stay in touch with your work and support you.
Thank you, David. You can visit me at alikriegsman.com, alikriegsman.com. You can read my blog there. You can read more about the book on there and pre-order the book if you're interested. And you can also follow me on Instagram at alikriegs, which is at alikriegs.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Ali.
Thank you, David.
Hey, friend. Thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Would love to hear what you learned and what you enjoyed. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever is best for you. And as a reminder, I'm just one email away as well. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.